You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. With his controversial attacks on President Obama and Democrats, Glenn Beck has become a hero of the conservative movement and a lightning rod for critics on the other side of the political spectrum. His Fox News show averages nearly 3 million viewers. His radio show gets well over twice that number, and he's written several best-selling books. Writer Thomas Frank, in an article for the new issue of Playboy, deconstructs some of Beck's arguments and also talks about his personal background. Frank is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and his books include What's the Matter with Kansas and The Wrecking Crew. The article is called The Triumph of the Conservative Underground, Glenn Beck's Holy War. Welcome to the show.
How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. So let's start off with, who is Glenn Beck, and why has he become more popular than Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly?
Well, that's a good question. He's an interesting guy, and one of the reasons I think that he's become so popular is that he does seem to connect with his audience in a way that Rush Limbaugh really can't. I think, you know, the conservatives have for a long time been sort of riding the populist wave, pretending to be, or in some cases actually being, you know, down with the blue collar kind of regular people. And I think Glenn Beck takes to that role more naturally than someone like Rush Limbaugh.
In what way? Is it because of his background?
I think so. And, Rush Limbaugh, I don't know, he lives in some crazy mansion in Florida that you're always reading about and, you know, talks into a gold microphone and that sort of thing. And Glenn Beck seems to be a genuine person. I mean, his ideas seem a little more out there than Rush Limbaugh, but as a person, he seems more authentic.
Do you think Beck would be as popular today if John McCain had won the election?
No, I don't. And I strongly doubt that he'll be as popular in like 2 years as he is today. I think this is a fleeting phenomenon.
Why is that? In 2 years, what will have changed? Do you expect Republicans to retake control of maybe the House or the Senate?
Well, no, nothing that pedestrian. I think it'll actually be because the economy fails to collapse. Glenn Beck is really playing on people's fears that that we're facing systemic collapse. That, you know, the dollar is going to be suffer hyperinflation. That there's going to be some kind of crazy socialist takeover. You know, he's forever advising people to buy gold, which is kind of the last resort of the the panicked investor. And gold, as your listeners no doubt know, is today trading at all-time highs. And my strong suspicion is that the economy won't collapse and that the dollar won't fall apart, and that things will, one of these days, get back to normal. And when they do, all of this sort of, you know, they had a term in the 19th century they called populists, they called them calamity howlers. And when the calamity fails to materialize, I think that'll be, this sort of thing will disappear.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Thomas Frank, the author of an article called The Triumph of the Conservative Underground, published in the latest edition of Playboy magazine. He's joining me from Philadelphia by phone, and we're talking about Glenn Beck. You mentioned the role of the economy in producing the Beck phenomena. So I guess you would agree with Tom Rosensteel, the director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He told The Times recently there are historical precedents for what is happening with Beck, and he mentions radio evangelism during the Depression.
I guess he's thinking of Father Coughlin, sort of famous example of he was the radio priest, they called him. I was actually the guy that that Glenn Beck reminds me of is Huey Long. Because he's, you know, he really is, Glenn Beck really is a product of this sort of awful economic moment that we're in right now. I wrote about populism, right-wing populism before. That's what What's the Matter with Kansas
right.
is about. And it was about right-wing populism in the 1990s, which was almost exclusively a culture war phenomenon. You know, it's all about, in Kansas, we had this terrible fight over evolution. You know, it's over the abortion issue, over what they call the social
And it's a sort of a, as you point out, a paranoid style that, you know, it's this, that I take it is fueled by what happened in the fall of 2008, that sort of economic brinksmanship we saw happening on Capitol Hill as legislators were trying to formulate some sort of bailout for the financial system.
Yeah, but it goes beyond that. It's if you watch his show very, very much, and for when I was writing this article, I was watching it every day. There's the man thinks that there's, or seems to think, and strongly hints that there's conspiracies behind everything. You know that that he alone is onto these things. Now he's a canny man. You know, he's a smart man, and he's smart enough to never actually spell out exactly what these conspiracies are in a way that, say, a journalist like me could then go and check. You know,
right.
So but he hints at this all the time, that the Obama administration is in the grip of some kind of socialist conspiracy, and that there's other conspiracies that are basically pulling the strings behind our politics, and he hints at this all the time, and that's the paranoid style. That's what it refers to this is an old term from the 1960s that they applied to the John Birch Society.
We have some audio clips of different Glenn Beck moments. He talks a lot about the end of what he calls America as we know it. Here's Glenn Beck talking about the country's future under the Obama administration.
We don't even understand freedom anymore. We are a country that is headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination.
Now, he has said he believes everything he says, but he also describes himself as a rodeo clown, which I take to mean that he jumps up and down until his enemy notices him and runs at him. What are we to make of statements like this?
He's very good at self-deprecating, and he often says, I am a silly man, I'm an absurd man. I'm not quoting directly here, of course. I may strike you as a ridiculous figure. You know, he's maudlin, he cries on the air sometimes, and he often says, I may strike you as personally as a ridiculous figure, but my arguments are what matters. So that when he calls himself a rodeo clown, he's referring to, it's his way of sort of poo-pooing himself. I mean, the guy is very good at what he does. It's a brilliant sort of way of speaking to the audience, to constantly downplay your own ego.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's telling to me that he has a background as a comedian and also as a morning zoo radio show host.
That's right. Yes, the guy is very good behind the microphone. He's a talented performer, and he's sometimes even I'm a deep-seated liberal, he'd probably call me a socialist or something like that. But when I, or a totalitarian or whatever it is. But when I watch him, sometimes, I mean, he strikes me as very funny. Mm. I mean, he really, truly is.
Well, certainly funny enough to have comedian Jon Stewart really skewer him and lampoon him recently on the Daily Show, and I think the tone was perfect there. Going back to what makes this wave of conservatism different from that during, say, President Clinton's time as in office, or from the conservatives who put George W. Bush into office. You were mentioning the culture war, so it's really about these economic uncertainties, and that is enough to drive people to think or to resonate with Glenn Beck saying some of these things, like the Obama administration is setting up a parallel army, a secret army, or that FEMA is setting up concentration camps. What's the leap there?
A lot of these are old left-wing fears turned on their head. The FEMA setting up concentration camps. This actually goes back to something that's sort of real in the Reagan administration. The FEMA came up with plans in the event of a nuclear war to round up radicals, meaning people on the left. And there was even back in the 1950s. Glenn Beck is kind of in the great American red baiting tradition. And in the 1950s, one of the big red hunting laws that was passed by Congress, I think one of the McCarran Acts, actually did set up, they were going to set up concentration camps for communists. And so he's just sort of turned that, you know, with, you know, the right used to persecute the left in this country, and now he's just imagining that's going to happen back to him. And the same with the parallel army. This is a constant fear of conservatives around the world. This is what in Chile, when they were worried about when they were building up to the military coup against Allende, they claimed that he had built a parallel army, and that's why they needed to overthrow him and kill him.
Okay. Wow.
It's not funny, I know. It's not funny, but
yeah.
But that's a lot of these. This is sort of typical of the paranoid right, is that it takes things that the other side says and sort of flips them on their head. It's very common.
You say Beck's political program would do much to wreck working class lives and heap even more of civilization's rewards on the people he apparently despises. I'm quoting from your article here. This is the premise of your book, What's the Matter with Kansas? Can you be more specific about how Glenn Beck ties into that vein of conservative thinking?
Start from the beginning. Conservatives have real trouble talking about what actually caused the financial crisis. They're very good at talking about, you know, how much they abhor deficits and, you know, the deficit spending and the bank bailout. That's, you know, they're very good on that issue. I mean, talking about that issue, they cannot talk about what actually caused the financial crisis. You know, the misbehavior by mortgage lenders, the huge conflicts of interest that led the banks to package up these mortgages into, you know, various kinds of bonds and led the rating agencies to give those bonds AAA ratings, and on and on and on and on. You know, all the crazy financial shenanigans that were going on. They just dismiss all of that and say that the financial crisis happened because liberals in Washington forced banks to hand out loans to undeserving people. Okay, which is not true on the face of it, but this is the only explanation that the right can come up with. And then starting from that premise, you know, when you come to solutions, what are the solutions then? Well, first of all, you know, slam the brakes on government spending in the middle of a recession, it would be absolutely disastrous. You think of some of the other things like the gold standard. You know, putting us on a gold standard would deflate the currency. It would be catastrophic. You know, there's all these solutions that we're talking about here. He's also very hostile to organized labor, which is one of the few things that has kept wages from being absolutely destroyed in this country.
And it's interesting that a lot of the concern now on the right about government spending comes after the Obama administration, when Barack Obama is basically following the game plan that was set forth by former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and George W. Bush.
Well, that's right. Well, the deficits, we had huge deficits in the Reagan era, you'll recall. And, of course, conservatives have repeatedly rode into office complaining about deficit spending, but then they themselves also just as routinely make the problem much, much, much worse. And this is such a persistent pattern that you can basically say that massive deficit spending is just one of the things that you get when you put a guy like George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan in the presidential chair. That's what they'll do. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is because it makes it difficult for the liberals who eventually will return to power. It makes it difficult for them to do things like have a national health care program or something like that, because the deficit, you know, you've already got this massive burden. The problem, we're now seeing the problem with that strategy, which is that, you know, the sort of classical doctrine of deficit spending, you know, Keynesianism, where it's counter-cyclical spending, you don't, you know, blow the kitty while you're in boom times, which is what George Bush did. You don't run up massive deficits while the economy is booming. That's when you try to recoup the losses and bring the government balance sheets back to zero. Now is the time when you want to be able to run huge deficits at the federal level and make up for all the spending that's gone from the economy. But we can't, because George Bush spent it all on outsourcing government over the last 10 years and running war in Iraq, that sort of thing.
We've got a caller, Dan from Bridgewater, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Thomas Frank. Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Frank. I read all your books, and I have to say, I was a conservative leader in New York and New Jersey because I came from an East European country, and I believed in individual freedom. But I was forced into being a liberal by the fact that the conservatives, as I knew them, were really people who had a chip on their shoulder and felt they were too weak and too incapable of doing anything. And now they're rebelling against their middle-aged status, which makes them even weaker. And I really fear that these people will be prone towards violence because they have an intellectual inferiority complex, and they really feel that this last August they showed their physical power, the physical proudness, in scaring the hell out of a lot of liberals. And I wonder whether you think that this is going to be a serious problem as unemployment lingers and as people become increasingly dissatisfied with government in general.
Dan, thanks so much for your call.
Well, it's a huge issue, and my colleagues and I talk about this all the time. What the caller is referring to, I think, are the people who showed up at town hall meetings with their guns and things like that, which was, you know, completely inappropriate, an effort to intimidate people engaged in the, you know, civic debate. Look, I can't worry about that. The America that I grew up in has never had anything like that, where you private armies in the street or something like that. And so I can't take it seriously. It's just if that were to materialize, it wouldn't be the America that I grew up in. You know, this is a funny thing because Beck, like these other conservatives, often talks about his lost America. And it's a funny thing because that's one of my sort of constant refrains also. I come from Kansas. You know, it was a state full of small towns, small manufacturing cities, farm-to-market towns. And that whole way of life has been wiped out. And the thing that wiped it out is not liberalism. You know, liberals used to, believe it or not, liberals used to stand up for the small farmer. The thing that wiped it out was conservative farm policies and, you know, free market economics, the refusal to enforce antitrust, you know, right down the list. That's what killed the America that I grew up in. And so it's funny, I am just as sentimental as someone like Beck, someone like Glenn Beck, about that sort of lost Norman Rockwell America. But the thing is, if you really look at what killed it, you know, it wasn't liberalism. Look who's been in charge for the last 30 years.
I'm speaking with Thomas Frank about his article, The Triumph of the Conservative Underground. It appears in the December issue of Playboy magazine. We will be back with more after a break. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Thomas Frank, author of The Triumph of the Conservative Underground, about Glenn Beck. He's calling me from Philadelphia this morning. Thomas, why do you say Beck is mainstream? He has some outlandish views, like the one we just mentioned about, you know, setting up a secret parallel army. Who has embraced these views?
That's a good question. When I said mainstream, what I was probably referring to was, I mean, because, you know, clearly he's not in terms of the news organizations. In fact, he likes to make fun of the mainstream media. I forget what his pet name for them is. He calls them the fringe media. You know, he sort of turns the tables on them. But he's mainstream in that sort of Norman Rockwell sense, and then, you know, talking about that lost America and that middle class America. He's even written books that are of this sort of nostalgia for a kind of small town upbringing. There's one that he's pushing right now about it's a Christmas book that's actually
The Christmas Sweater.
The Christmas Sweater. It's almost completely apolitical.
It's about his childhood, right? Or
that's right. Yeah, it's sort of a very thinly masked, fictionalized version of his childhood.
When you say mainstream, what I interpret that to mean is maybe what is driving his popularity is that he's saying stuff out loud on mainstream television that is being whispered about on far-right blogs and Twitter feeds. He's giving voice to these, you know, this stuff some really vile stuff.
Yeah, the sort of suspicions that when I was younger you would get in a newsletter, you know, format or something like that, or in direct mail, or, you know, one of these sort of, what would you say, very out of the mainstream formats, but now it's here on TV. You know, when I was young, there was the John Birch Society, and no one would ever call that mainstream. And it's been their political views, of course. They claim to be representing ordinary Americans and all that sort of thing. And now those very similar views are right there in prime time.
Beck has a tendency to say he's not comparing Obama and the Democrats to Hitler and the Nazis, and then he brings up Hitler and the Nazis. We have another clip of Glenn Beck here. He is talking about the federal bank bailouts.
This is not comparing these people to the people in Germany, but this is exactly what happened to the lead up with Hitler. Hitler opened up the door and said, hey, companies, I can help you. They all ran through the door. And then in the end, they all saw, uh-oh, I'm in bed with the devil. They started to take their foot out, and Hitler said, absolutely not. Sorry, gang, this is good for the country. We got to do these things. And it was too late.
Beck also brings up the Nazi eugenics program when talking about health care reform. Who's calling him on this?
Well, the thing is that this stuff is too crazy to bother calling him on. And now, you read the article that I wrote for Playboy. I actually go through a lot of his books and the stuff that he's actually taken pains to put into print. And I've sort of cataloged all the contradictions and errors and things like that.
Right. Would you describe them for our listeners?
Well, I'll go through a few of them.
Yes. Just one or two.
You're going to help me out here because I don't have it in front of me. I'm in a hotel lobby in Philadelphia. We're driving up to some relatives today for Thanksgiving, and I stopped the car here. But the one that really struck me is, I didn't. There's no point to refuting his stuff about the Nazis because it's nobody really. You can't take that seriously. It's just too ridiculous. But he does talk about the Founding Fathers all the time, and in the sense that the Founding Fathers were incapable of error, that they designed for us this perfect, body politic in the form of the Constitution, and that all the answers to our political questions are to be found there if only we will consult it and try to understand the mind of the Founding Fathers. And this is in my view, a complete misinterpretation of the Founding Fathers and the way that they went about things. For example, the Founding Fathers fought among themselves all the time. The Founding Father that Beck loves to go back to the most is Thomas Paine. Now, Paine didn't have a hand, obviously, in writing the Constitution, but there's one Paine tract in particular, Common Sense, a very famous pamphlet that Thomas Paine wrote that sort of triggered the revolution in 1776. But Thomas Paine is actually one of my sort of great heroes of history, I'm very liberal, as I said before. And if you read Thomas Paine's other works, Thomas Paine went out and signed up for the French Revolution. Thomas Paine was this incredible foe of organized religion, just hated it. I mean, he wrote one of the most savage denunciations of Christianity that anybody has ever written in a book called The Age of Reason. It's sort of his great classic, but you get the sense that, Glenn Beck is very pious, very religious. You get the sense that he has never heard of this, that his hero was this fervent foe of religion. Thomas Paine also proposed more than once this idea of a kind of social insurance scheme where everybody, kind of so what we would now call a social security scheme. He also wanted, had various full employment schemes. All the sort of the seeds of the welfare state were all planted by Thomas Paine. He was a very, visionary guy in that sense. But Glenn Beck doesn't seem to be aware of any of this.
What is he focusing on about Paine?
Oh, just on the fact that the guy wrote something called Common Sense. Common Sense, mm-hmm. That's the one. And so he likes to use that phrase, Common Sense. Again and again, he puts on a three-cornered hat and says, Common Sense. He also seems to think that the founders had these very particular views about, modern advanced capitalism, when in fact, they had no, they didn't, capitalism as we know it basically didn't exist back then. And the founder who was the most advanced in terms of economics, Alexander Hamilton, had what, I mean, almost a socialist view of how you should encourage capitalist enterprise with all kinds of state involvement. But this is kind of typical of the right, that they revere the founding fathers, but and they think they know what the founding fathers were all about. But if you dig just, you know, in the just a tiny bit below the surface, you find it just ain't so.
I'm speaking with Thomas Frank, the author of The Triumph of the Conservative Underground, about Glenn Beck. He's also the author of the 2004 book, What's the Matter with Kansas? I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. Thomas, let's go to a brief soundbite of something that Glenn Beck said that got him in a lot of trouble. He took a lot of heat when he called President Obama a racist. Here he is talking about the president.
I'm saying he has a problem. He has a, this guy is, I believe, a racist.
He added that Obama has a deep-seated hatred of white people. That led some advertisers to pull out of his show. And Rupert Murdoch defended Beck for his comments. So raises the question for me, no limits for Glenn Beck, no consequences?
Well, it's funny because he hasn't come back to that idea. And that, like you said, that idea got him in a lot of hot water, and it sparked an advertising boycott. And what he did then was just sort of whine about how people were being mean to him and people were organizing this boycott. What would have been really fascinating would be if he had stuck by his guns and sat down and tried to prove that Obama was a racist. That would have been fascinating. That would have been real serious journalism.
Was he suspended for this comment, or some blogs say he
so,
was,
no.
Others say he was
no,
on vacation?
No, I don't think so. Not that I recall.
How did Beck's upbringing influence who he is?
Oh, that's the thing is, I don't really know a lot about his childhood, except for what he writes in The Christmas Sweater, and a lot of that is fictionalized, and I don't know how much of that you can trust, but I believe he came from a broken home, and I believe a blue-collar background. And the only thing that I would point out here is that these things do serve to make him that much more of an authentic voice for a lot of people. You know, he doesn't come from sort of perfect upper middle class, background. He's not a college grad, you know. He's not part of the sort of upper middle class. He just isn't. And I think that helps him with credibility.
What's also interesting too is that he's not a mainstreamer in terms of his faith. He's a Mormon. He converted to Mormonism.
That's right.
How has his religion influenced who he is, or does he talk about it on his show a lot?
Not on his show, but he does have a DVD out there that I bought in which he does a stage performance describing his conversion to Mormonism, and again, it's, you know, he's very good at this, and it's actually, it's quite moving at times, where he describes, you know, how screwed up his life was and how he came to find Jesus and this sort of thing. And it's quite moving, and it has almost nothing to do with politics. And you sometimes wonder, how can that be the same guy that's saying these things on TV? But there are I'm not an expert on Mormonism, and so I wouldn't really be able to tell you what how the doctrines of that church influence his politics. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem.
I'm going to drop the ball on that one.
Okay. We've talked earlier about Beck engaging in what one professor of media and politics, Jeffrey Jones, calls inciting rhetoric, but one listener called in to point out that there's been no violence from Beck supporters. This seems to be a concern of his of late. I guess recently he took like 17 minutes during his cable show to refute claims that he was trying to stir people up to violence or to revolution.
That's an interesting point. Now, the whole incitement critique is one that I myself try to stay away from. When the caller, the guy who called in earlier in the show, it's not something that I think anybody is really aiming for. I think that Beck is it's about entertainment. Look, this is the genius of in a certain way, this is the genius of Fox News. This is what Fox News is all about. They're so successful at it. They realized somebody, you know, some mastermind programming genius somewhere figured out that what I call the backlash in politics, you know, which has been going on since the late 1960s in this country, also was really, really compelling as a form of entertainment. You remember All in the Family? You know, remember the TV show back in the 70s with Archie Bunker? And everybody, Archie Bunker was originally written as this kind of buffoon, but the public really liked him and his cranky right-wing views. And I think the people who developed Fox News figured out that this stuff is a lot of fun as a form of entertainment. And I really think at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. Whether Republicans win or lose in elections, I mean, who knows? Who knows if that's going to happen? And if it does happen, how would that help, you know, the people who run Fox News? It wouldn't. But it is a very compelling – look, I even watch the network sometimes. It is fun to watch, you know.
Do you think
caught up in these theories and these weird complaints and these, you know, incredible grievances with the world.
Do you think it's one of the reasons why Rupert Murdoch did defend Beck for his comment about Obama being a racist?
I have no insight on that. I didn't even know that he did, so I'm sorry.
Yeah. Your article concludes that people love Beck because it's fun to believe liberalism is a form of totalitarianism. Really? We need commies to feel good about ourselves and have a good time?
Well, this is the thing. If you think about what Beck is doing, I've been reading a lot of books about the Red Scare in the 1950s, and the Red Scare was, you know, if you put aside all the sort of, you know, the people whose lives were ruined, the people who were imprisoned, you know, all the terrible things that happened, and you regard it just as a form of entertainment, people really got into it. The idea that we were under siege by this incredibly evil, you know, malevolent, conspiratorial enemy, you know, and conspiracy is, it's always secret, right? You can't really see it. You can only see little bits of it sticking out here and there. And people really loved to believe this. And so what Glenn Beck is doing is basically it's a Red Scare without Reds. I mean, back in the 50s, at least, you had the Soviet Union. There was a real Communist Party in America, or there had been in within recent memory, you know, in the 30s and 40s. Today, none of those things apply. And yet here he is telling us, you know, basically using the same rhetoric from that era, you know, it's completely farcical because there is, like, why would there be a communist conspiracy, you know? It's about as likely as a Bonapartist conspiracy. It's just so completely random. But people get into it. It's fun to have a Red Scare. You don't even need Reds to have a Red Scare.
I'm speaking with Thomas Frank about his article, The Triumph of the Conservative Underground. It appears in the December issue of Playboy magazine. We'll be back with more of the show after a break. Thomas Frank, thanks so much for joining me today, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, it's completely my pleasure. Thank you.